Welcome to the GSI Briefing Podcast. I am your host, Regina Ejia, president of the Garden State Initiative. Today, we are excited to have two former New Jersey legislators with us to discuss Governor Murphy's recently released budget proposal and what they see as the highest priorities for our state in 2022 and beyond. Former Senator Diane Allen first served in the Assembly beginning in 1996 before being elected to the state Senate from 1997 until 2017. Diane represented District 7, including parts of Burlington County, and served in several leadership positions, including conference leader and deputy minority leader. In 2021, she also ran for lieutenant governor alongside Jack Cittarelli. Diane Allen was a news anchor in the 1970s through the 1990s on Philadelphia broadcast TV on both CBS Channel 3 and NBC Channel 10, and was awarded 9 Emmys and a Peabody for her work. Former Assemblyman and Deputy Speaker John Berzicelli grew up in Paulsboro, New Jersey, in Gloucester County, where he currently resides. From 2002 to 2021, he represented the 3rd Legislative District, as well as served as mayor of Paulsboro from 1996 to 2011. Assemblyman Berzicelli served as vice chair of the Assembly Budget Committee. Since both our guests hail from the southern part of our state and served in leadership positions in each legislative house, we'll also ask Diane and John if there are different policies or priorities that ought to be pursued to stimulate the economies in the south versus northern part of New Jersey. Now, here is our conversation with former Senator Diane Allen and Assemblyman John Berzicelli. Today, we are thrilled to have with us two former legislators who are going to provide great insights on the fiscal and economic issues facing New Jersey. So today we have with us both Assemblyman John Berzicelli and Senator Diane Allen. So welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
So we're going to talk about the budget today, but before we get into the recently proposed budget for fiscal year 23, I was going to ask each of you if you could provide your perspectives for the audience on how you assess our state's economic and fiscal position now in the spring of 22. And Senator Allen, I'll ask you to start.
Well, we certainly are awash in money. There's no question about that. The big question is, how will it be used? Will it be used appropriately? And will it be used the way the people of New Jersey want it to be used? And I fear that is not the case. If we learned anything from the election that Jack Cittarelli and I recently ran in, we learned that the people of New Jersey wanted to see taxes cut. There just was no question about that. And that is not something that we're really seeing in this budget, unfortunately. When it comes to where we are economically, I suppose one of our biggest problems, in my estimation, is that we're not taking care of businesses. We're not taking care of the folks who create the jobs. We need to put more money into businesses, cutting taxes, particularly the UI tax is just ridiculous that it's going to continue to go up year after year. One more thing on fiscal position, I think I did understand that we have seen our ratings go up, and I am pleased about that. And I have to give kudos to the governor on that.
So for our audience sake, Senator, UI meaning the unemployment, the payroll tax for unemployment to fulfill that fund.
Yes.
And you're right, the credit agency, Moody's actually recently upgraded the credit. So thanks for those comments. And Assemblyman, I'll ask you to do the same.
Well, it's good to be here. It's good to see you, to be with Senator Allen, who I know for a number of years and have just great respect for. Got to see her on a campaign trail, and we both had the same results this year for different reasons. But that being said, I concur with some of her thoughts. This straightforward question where we are as an economy is a complicated one. I mean, New Jersey presently is ranked 4th with regards to average wages across the state. That's probably a good thing. But the economy is shifting under us every day, it seems. I mean, retail is changing dramatically. So where these jobs are going to come from, what happens next? I mean, we're watching warehouses sprout up in fields. So we see the big box warehouse people come in now and they promise great jobs. And what we're seeing in trends is over a couple of years, these jobs are eroded by automation. So, you know, there's just a lot of uncertainty. The senator's correct. I mean, the budget is awash with money. That's not an incorrect term. But management of that is going to be very critical. But the economy itself is a challenging one. I mean, I had thought that we would have recreational marijuana up and running by now. Mm. I thought the idea of the Cannabis Control Commission modeled after this Casino Control Commission was the right approach, because legislature cannot be nimble enough to make the kind of decisions that have to be made to bring this to life. But that's dragging, and it wasn't even mentioned, I don't think, in the governor's budget address yesterday. I mean, I had it on, but I don't think I heard that. So, you know, in the general economy, I mean, you know, traditionally New Jersey's lagged coming out of recessions. It seems like, based on the governor's comment yesterday, if we just take it as being correct for a given quarter, there was encouragement. But again, you know, what does a new economy look like, and what does it mean? I don't know, you know, the people that make a living developing things, not sure what to do with malls and those kinds of facilities which have aged out. I think there's great challenges, but I think that challenges across the country. We remain well-placed because of our population and where we sit, but people have to keep their eye on the ball. This is not going to be easy. And this budget, as Diane again said, is a wash in money, but, you know, it's a little bit of an anomaly at the moment. So, you know, 2 years down the road, things could be very different.
Well, thanks. Yeah, let's build on those comments, Assemblyman, because as you say, the wash of money references that there's just been higher revenue collected by the state than was anticipated. I think it's over $4 billion higher than anticipated. And there's unspent federal aid somewhere between $3 and $4 billion. So maybe just get a more specifics, John, if you would, like three areas that you think were addressed best inside the budget. And if there are any topics, I guess, in addition to cannabis, I agree a lot of people are commenting on that, but any other areas that you think are being overlooked?
I always remind people, you know, the budget is a document of estimates. You don't collect all the money on the first day, you don't spend it on the first day, and particularly the governor's announcement. I mean, the legislature will now weigh in, which is always, that's a process that is designed to dig very deep. So, you know, on the upside, you know, more money for public education, although I'd say you do. I mean, I'm a pro-public education person. We've moved so much money into these districts so quickly. I wonder what's sitting and how it can be effectively spent in short term. And for critics who are saying, because my friend who is a senator represents Cumberland County, Senator Testa said, well, I have districts that are losing money. There's a reason for that, because as the funding formula is put in full effect, the money's going where the kids are. There are districts that are going to lose money because they don't have the same amount of kids. But that was intentionally done in a phased-in process, so it wouldn't be so harsh and abrupt. So, you know, this budget spends a lot of money in public education, and, you know, we want results, but we need efficiencies. So the question is, as we move money into school districts, are they prepared for the money? Should we move it to the school districts right away? Should it somehow be held in reserve so it's reflected in the budget but doesn't go until it's demonstrated it can be spent in the way it's supposed to be spent? That's just one area. Budget's a very complicated document. I think Diane probably would jump in on some of that as well.
I'm certainly glad that you brought up education. I'm always pleased when we prioritize education, but I don't think that we're doing it correctly. I know I'm deviating from your, what are the three best things? But I'm afraid that there weren't that many best things. I look at education funding, and I truly believe that we need to completely redo our education plan, our funding plan. As you well know, Assemblyman, down in South Jersey, there are many towns that are spending $15,000 a pupil or even less in some towns. In my town of Willingboro that I represented for 22 years, $17,000 per student. But then we look up at Asbury Park, $45,000 per student. We look at many towns in North Jersey, far more money being spent per student. I believe that our kids in South Jersey are just as worthwhile as the kids in North Jersey. And until we are able to spend our money more wisely and not let geography determine what kind of education a child gets, but rather every child gets the same amount of money. And that also leads, I think, to charter schools. I think we need to increase our charter schools. I think we need to take another look at vouchers. I really believe that if we're going to redo our education plan, we have to open up every possibility. And the other bottom line on this is when we do that, we will be able to cut taxes. I think there is no question about that. And I'm surprised actually that the governor didn't decide to actually cut taxes. If there was any resounding note from the populace during this last election. It was that they did not want to see any increases in taxes, but in fact wanted to see taxes go down. The governor's trying a little something with his anchor plan, and it's real money. $700 is nothing to sneeze at per person, but we should be giving far more back to each person. Right now, the state is taking so much, sucking so much money in, and then deciding how they want to spend it. I have always believed that we, the people, should have that money, and we should determine how it should be spent.
Well, you bring up several good points, and education obviously is, I think, when you really consolidate all the spending across the state, it's the largest expense that is spent on operations inside of our state. And so it's an essential discussion, you know, that you're bringing up. And you're also, John, you referenced that, you know, now the governor makes his proposal, but it goes to the legislature. And actually, that's where the next step is, where you'll review it and think about it. So I wanted to maybe help the audience a little bit understand. So what happens next? And I want to ask a couple process questions. So Senator Diane Allen, I'm going to start with you. Because you've had the experience of serving in the majority during your assembly career, but you've also been in the majority and the minority in the Senate. So maybe you could help the audience a bit understand, how do you see the roles differing depending upon whether or not your party's in control now that you're evaluating the budget that the governor has presented?
Well, obviously, it's much more difficult when you're in the minority, whether it's dealing with the budget or it's dealing with any piece of legislation. If you're in the minority, you talk with your friends on the other side of the aisle and talk about the things that you think need to be done and perhaps give them information that is helpful. When you're trying to get a piece of legislation through, sometimes you can get them more involved in that piece of legislation if you find something more on the local level, their district, that they can identify with. And there have been many times where I ended up giving my legislation to somebody else so it would be under their name, but that made sure that the bill would get through. You can't always take the pride in authorship too far. You need to make sure that what is good for the state is actually what's occurring. I think it's better when we have, you know, I served when we had a 2020 Senate. And it was fascinating because we really had to work together. We really got to know each other. We really got to find out what people actually cared about the most and how we could help each other's districts. I think it was one of the best times. But when you have one party, and it could be either party, is in charge, they tend to relegate the minority to the waste heap. I've seen it happen with Republicans and Democrats. That's not good. That doesn't really do what the state needs. We need to have people who work together. So it's my hope that as we work towards this budget season in Trenton, that we'll see the Democrats in the majority listening to some of the things that the Republicans are saying. And hopefully that we can all work together and come up with something that really reflects what the people want. That is the bottom line.
Very interesting comments about the 20 Republicans, 20 Democrats that you're referencing. And, Assemblyman, you were the vice chair, I think, of the Assembly Budget Committee while you were in the House. So, you know, if you had complete control over the budget process, you know, what would you change? And what do you really think for audiences, understanding is the most important thing they need to understand about the state budget?
First of all, I think the budget process is a healthy one. Senator's comments are well-placed, and anyone who followed my career, especially chairman of appropriations, knows that I was very inclusive and respectful of all my colleagues because every voice was very important, and the budget process should always conduct itself that way because the budget should be reflective in large part of what we think is the best for the state. And, you know, and so it's about relationships and personalities, and they all matter. Here you have a document that's the largest budget in New Jersey state history that's been proposed. There's plenty to go around for everyone and everything. But at the same point, you got to get it right. So, you know, I go back to education, but even the other point, because I probably didn't answer the question correctly. You know, the governor talked about $900 million set aside for this anchor program. It's a rebate program. It's nothing new. I still have my rebate check that I got when Governor Whitman was governor, and it is less than $10. I kept it as a souvenir. But the point is, this gimmick's been around a long time, and gimmicks don't work in the long haul. Frankly, New Jerseyans were getting checks. I mean, the state sent out a $500 check last cycle, people complained that it was too small. So they said, well, we got one for $2,000. What's this one for $500? So, you know, my comment's very simple about that program that he's proposing. Good idea. He got the message through the election cycle. Because, by the way, I live in New Jersey, obviously, and taxes are my issue. So, no, I think that's a fair point. My comment to my colleagues when asked about the, because I was at dinner with friends, asked about the speech, I said, it was a wonderful speech. I said, but let me say it this way. If that $900 million does not find its way onto the tax bill, which we did during for a year or two, it's got to go on a tax bill. If it's not on a tax bill, it's not property tax relief because it'll get lost when it gets to the house. Nobody will remember, wait a second, I got a $700 check. I got to go pay my property taxes. They're going to Walmart or they're going somewhere. So my counsel is, and if I was sitting in that chamber, I'd be jumping up and down and saying to everybody, look, wonderful. Got to get it on a tax bill. We pay it to the municipality, it goes to the credit of the account. And when that person looks at that tax bill, they're going to see in a quarter that they got a $700 reduction in their taxes. I think that's a more effective way to make that program be more impactful.
I completely agree with the assemblyman, and his reputation is stellar when it comes to these kinds of things. And he really did make a big difference in the budget process over many years. But his point about there being this give back program that didn't work. I mean, we've had five separate rebate plans since the whole income tax came in, I think, 76. And each one starts out really big in no matter what the party in charge, and then it kind of dissipates over a period of time. And this anchor program that the governor has suggested starts rather on the smaller side and then is supposed to go up year by year over a period of years. There's no way of knowing what it's going to be like in America, in New Jersey, in the world in 3 years. I mean, who knows what the international situation is, you know, and that will greatly impact our future in New Jersey, everywhere, in fact. And that is a big concern. I know that the Republicans are suggesting a $3 billion give back, not $900 million, and they want to do it right away. And I think they want to do it as a tax credit. And I'm hoping that that is looked at very closely because I think they've worked on it quite a bit. I just kind of think that there are other areas too. Our energy receipts tax. I mean, the municipalities need to be getting that money back. I mean, there's so much involving tax dollars that was not dealt with in this speech. And honestly, I just think that the governor really didn't hear what New Jersey residents were saying in this last election. And I think that is going to be a big problem for him if and when he decides to run for president. It will follow him.
Well, and of course, as we all know, the legislature, who's an integral part of the processes we just talked about, are on the ballot next year. And I think they will have to answer for this. You know, every poll that we look at, and I know you've seen as well, it's not just the tax burden, it's the property tax burden. And Assemblyman, I totally agree with you. Unless people see that correlation between my property taxes going down, there's not going to be a sense of relief. And frankly, rebate of whatever size, it doesn't really, you know, assist, I think, in the perception of New Jersey really becoming more competitive. And I just want to talk about that a little bit more broadly now, you know, beyond the budget itself, because, you know, our state is, GSI has observed that our state has consistently lagged the U.S. both pre-pandemic and now as we have moved, you know, past the pandemic on important economic growth metrics. We are certainly improving, right, as a state and growing jobs and reducing unemployment, and we do have positive growth in personal income. But I worry that the other states are recovering faster and they're widening the gap between the attractiveness of our state with nearly every other state in the U.S. So I wanted to ask you more broadly now, how do you see New Jersey's competitiveness for jobs and residents? And using your crystal ball again, John, like, where do you see New Jersey standing in 3.5 years when the next governor will be taking over? So, John, I'll ask you to start.
My crystal ball is very cloudy because if I had any sense of what the future is going to bring, I would have made a lot of other decisions through my youth and than I have. So, you know, I go back to my earlier comments. I mean, you know, these are very challenging times because things are shifting so quickly. New Jersey is a unique place because we're an older state with legacy issues in the Northeast, just the way it is. I mean, you know, it's easy to take a lot of ground in Texas and start fresh and look around and say, well, I'm going to do it this way. You know, here it's hard to turn the ship. You know, we had a tax session, and the senator may remember this. It was both houses were together. It was Bernard Kenny and myself who chaired the property tax review thing. We did that after in the summer session. And, you know, when we finished that, the New York Times reporter asked me, he said, well, what is your assessment? You've had all the assessment and people came in from out of states. And I said, look, it's very simple. I said, New Jerseyans want reform. They just don't want change. And that's, you know, that's the dynamic that challenges us, because clearly we should not be funding public education off the property tax bill. And a lot of the things that are driving the burden we have, you know, just we can't seem to muster the wherewithal to tackle them because people are distracted and don't want to do it, or they just change frightens people. It just frightens people. So, you know, New Jersey's potential is unlimited, as is America's. But, you know, again, you know, people say, well, John, you were there 20 years and you didn't fix it. No, I didn't fix it. If it was easy to fix, it would have been fixed. Diane would have fixed it. She preceded me there. You know, it's not as if that state house is full of people that don't care, don't want to fix something. But we all go home and we all represent constituents. So as I always like to say, democracy is very clumsy. So I would say it again, and it's held up over the years. New Jerseyans are crying for reform. They just don't like the idea of change. And we need change. And we need structural change. We got too much government, we got too many school systems. We got a lot of all those wonderful things. And you know, New Jersey, and again, they want reforms. They just don't want their stuff changed.
Thanks, John. Diane?
I think that that's a very interesting way of looking at things. And I think there's a lot of truth to it. But if you're able to explain things to people, they will go with it. And I think if they understand that this will bring down property taxes, the average person will allow those changes. Don't think that perhaps the teachers union will or some other groups, but we need to focus on what's best for the state, not for each individual. I think that really kind of makes a difference. You talk about, you know, other states are putting out the welcome mat, and there's no question. They're not taxing their businesses the way we do. And business, you don't see a lot of big businesses moving into New Jersey, but you sure do see a lot of big ones moving out of New Jersey. And that should ring alarm bells for everybody, because that's part of the big tax base, and we're losing that. I know that the governor says that people aren't moving away from New Jersey, but I know many people who make lots of money and they have changed their domicile. They've had houses in Florida, Texas, wherever it might be, and they change their residency to that state. They still have their home here. They still live here. They still enjoy the pluses of this state, and there are many, but they're not paying the big taxes anymore because it's just gotten ridiculous. Governor said there are more millionaires. God bless them all. But as they continue to increase the amount of assets that they have, they will start looking as well and start leaving. And really, that leaves a lot of folks who are here who wish they could leave too, and they can't. They are so entrenched with their job, their kids are in the school, maybe there's a family member they're caring for, whatever it is, they can't leave. And it's so unfair. It really is. I have always said I wanted to see New Jersey residents feel that they're here because they want to be here, that it's a great place to live, and they want to raise their children here and their grandchildren after that. And I fear that what we have instead of a welcome mat is something that I saw a while ago, somebody wearing a t-shirt that said, "Welcome to New Jersey. Now get out."
Interesting. Yeah. Well, we have to keep our eye on the ball, you know, of other states, because we are in a competitive game. I truly believe that for both jobs, you know, and people. In the introduction, you know, we talked about both of you really hail from the southern part of the state, and you made reference to it during some of your prior answers. But, you know, we've done some work, and I'll just talk about infrastructure for a minute, you know, on transportation. And You know, essentially, when we look at the whole state and look at, you know, where the funding for transportation comes from, where it's being invested, it really does look like there's a lot of tax, you know, gas tax money and tolls being paid in the southern part of the state, but it doesn't look like there's an equal investment coming back into, you know, kind of south of Ocean County. So, you know, I've talked to others about this, and I really, you know, not necessarily just about transportation, but because both of you are from that area, but you've both held leadership positions. I wanted to ask you, you know, kind of, do you think that there are some policies that really ought to be pursued with different nuances between the North and the South? And how can we really make that happen inside the legislature? And Diane, I'll start with you, and then we'll end up with you, John.
I will tell you, I was one of the ones involved in getting the light rail system in South Jersey. It is now Trenton to Camden. When I proposed it, it was Trenton all the way down into South Jersey. But at that point, those who were in political office didn't have the, we'll say, backbone to stand up to some folks who were saying they didn't want change, as John put it. Everybody wanted the transportation system, but nobody wanted to have it in their backyard, even though it was on an existing rail line. Fighting for that, I came to realize that the folks in North Jersey have so many different rail lines and bus lines and everything. And we had almost nothing down here. People in my district were really, I mean, it took an hour and a half for somebody who lived 5 miles away from where they would go for welfare or whatever in the county, but to get a bus to here and to then there. And I mean, it was ridiculous. And to trying to make those changes. And I will tell you, I have to give a shout out to Christy Whitman, because she stood up and said, you know what? You're right. There aren't as many people down there. And maybe there are those who feel like we should spend every dollar in North Jersey, but South Jersey does really require that we look at the people who are there. And she supported that light rail line. And it was in some respects to her detriment. I mean, not everybody was like, and we hear now that people don't think very much of it. There doesn't have the kind of ridership that the Bergen line has. But the truth is, many people use it. Many people need it. It's so important. And I'm very hopeful that we will see it increase in South Jersey and that we'll see other things as well, that we'll see the tolls being taken down on the Atlantic City Expressway, and so that we have an opportunity in South Jersey that they already have up in North Jersey. I'd like to just put in, when you talk about infrastructure, I'd like to just throw something that's a slightly different kind of infrastructure, if I may. We need to totally redo our computer system in the state of New Jersey. And that is something that, you look at the unemployment problems that we've had, and it isn't just because we haven't had the people there, or it's been closed down. It's also because of computer issues. And we're still using computers from, the dark ages, and they don't always talk to each other. We need to bring this state up with all the money that we have. Let's spend it on that. Let's have top of the line, unbelievably wonderful, fast, interconnected with every agency kinds of computer systems. Lots of infrastructure issues.
You know, the unfortunate thing is there's no real constituency for the IT infrastructure until it breaks. And now people are very sensitive to it because of the unemployment and the motor vehicles, et cetera.
Right.
But we have to keep that pressure up because it changes the ability, the efficiency, John, to your point, of government, as well as the effectiveness in terms of being able to deliver services. So I totally am glad you brought that up, and thank you. Mm-hmm. So John, to close us out, kind of north-south, and anything else you'd like to add?
Well, first of all, I've enjoyed seeing Diane, which I hadn't seen her since the campaign. I'm happy to see her looking so well. Not that she ever looks not well, but I'm happy to see her. And I appreciate being on this podcast, because these days it's becoming quickly John Who. So for somebody to call and say, can you join us in a conversation? I say, yeah, I think I would enjoy that. And as far as the regional issue goes, I was always very careful to see New Jersey as New Jersey. But you have to recognize that, there are differences in different regions of the state. And we were making up great ground with Steve Sweeney as Senate President, myself as Appropriations Chairman, Port Developments, the rail line Diane speaks of. I was mayor then, and she's absolutely correct. We had a mayor of Winona, mayor of Woodbury Heights. They didn't want the line. Jack Collins said, you don't want it. We'll take it to Trenton. And that's how that happened. Now we're spending much, much more money to put the line back in place. And the public pushed back with a couple of mayors, Diane, to let you know that you're still as youthful as you appear. The argument's the same. You know, they don't want it in their backyard again. So we're back in the same place. But from a standpoint, if you look at the growth of the state, and the southern part of the state was in large part agricultural and very big swaths of it. Now we're the growth area. So we have a lot of catching up to do. And people's habits here are different. People don't get on a train like they get on a train in Montclair and go into the city. You know, we had limited train service into Philadelphia for many years, you know, Pennsylvania Railroad, Chief Shore Line, that sort of thing. The PACO line exists now, and frankly, it does very well, you know, but it only pushes down to a certain point. So we have a lot of catching up to do. And the population, I mean, our population has stalled in Cumberland. It has stalled in Salem. It's, you know, the case picked up a little bit, I think, with the pandemic stuff. But, you know, it's about population, and we have a lot of catching up to do, and people have to decide how they want to travel. It's just on the transportation side. But remember, we have a major port now completed in Paulsboro with the Manapa facility going in for offshore wind. We have the governor's announcement on the new port in Lower Alloways Creek that marries the nuclear plant, which will be a logistics port for the offshore wind facility. All those are very good things. You know, New Jersey, as it looks at itself, has to realize that as tiny as we are, we have very unique characteristics in pockets, whether it's our Northwest and our mountain area or our Southern areas, and where we're watching agriculture be chewed up by warehouses at the moment. So, there are different needs. And, as Diane said, you know, you got to talk to people on both sides of the aisle and try and put the best deal together you can get once you know what you're asking for. So we're arguing for light rail to go to Glasspar. First, I was fighting the same battle Diane referred to. And what was that, Diane? 1996, 97, in that range?
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the argument from a couple people, it's identical. I remind Steve of that. So, but I remain optimistic because we have to remain optimistic. And I appreciate being invited to the show. I will close on this because I wanted to follow up. Diane made a point on the Asbury Park and some of those districts that are out of whack. I remind everybody that that's a result of the Abbott School District decision, that those districts, you know, just got a tremendous amount of money. And our school funding formula, which our Supreme Court has decided is constitutional, happened during the course of 9 years, is based on 9 building blocks and various formations. So, that formula is constitutional, but had never been exercised properly. And the state's inching closer to it. But there's some pain in that change. So, you know, it should have cost 45,000 educated students. Should have cost 15. It's probably somewhere in the middle. I don't think it's 45. And on the charter stuff, and I'd say this because I enjoy talking to Diane a great deal. You know, I asked this question, Diane, you probably enjoy this question, to a number of different education commissioners, said that the charter school idea is such a good format, then why are we running the public schools like charter schools? What's the secret here? Did they find something we couldn't find? And off the record, I'll say it now, both of them came back and said, well, it's the problem with our union work rules. That's why we can't run them like the charter schools. Interesting comment. So I don't think there's any secret that the charter schools are such a good idea, and let's run the public schools that way. So I don't think there's any problem that this state can't tackle if we decide to tackle it.
Thank you, John. And, you know, I had the honor of working with both of you down in Trenton, which I enjoyed tremendously. And you proved it again. You're very straightforward and, you know, really give a wonderful perspective for our state. So I wanted to thank you both. And I'm going to have you both back on. Obviously, education is a hot button that I'd love to talk about again. Maybe when we get this budget through, love to have you both on. So thank you, Assemblyman John Berzicelli and Senator Diane Allen, for sharing your insights. And we will definitely have you back.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you, Diane. Good to see you, Regina. Thank you.
The GSI Briefing is produced by the Garden State Initiative. For more information about GSI, visit us at gardenstateinitiative.org and be sure to follow us on social media. Don't forget to subscribe to the GSI Briefing on the podcast platform of your choice. And please leave us a good rating. This is Regina Agia, and thank you for listening.